The consequences of the rapidly evolving relationship with Russia aren't just resignations in Washington and eager eyes in Moscow. For many former Soviet bloc countries who remain in the Russian sphere of influence, a relationship with the U.S. is seen as an important pressure point in ensuring that basic human rights are adhered to. But is this still the case? Uzbekistan is a landlocked country with a human rights record described as arguably among the worst in the world by Human Rights Watch. There's the Andijan massacre in 2005, where hundreds of protesters were killed. There are videos of the confrontation between the armed authorities and Uzbek crowds. There was the cotton scandal that revealed an industry reliant on 1 to 2 million slave laborers. Last year, the U.S. Justice Department seized $850 million in assets as part of the Kleptocracy Asset Recovery Initiative, money that the Uzbek government is now demanding back, a government under new president Shavkat Mirziyoyev, who came to office with 88% of a vote, widely believed to be a sham. Sanjar Umarov and Umidov Niyazova both believe that. They were both political prisoners in Uzbekistan, having at one point spoken out against the country's oppression. They both managed to escape. Umida now lives in Berlin, where she's the director of the Uzbek-German Forum for Human Rights, and Sanjar is in the U.S., where he runs Sunshine Uzbekistan. Umida hopes that the new American administration can be a force for good in her country, though she's not optimistic.
Uzbekistan now is the most corrupt country in the world, and we have a new president, but everything the new president is doing now reminds me of the first years of former President Karimov. So over 25 years of Karimov government, propaganda has been able to create a very simple formula in Uzbek people's heads. Like, people always express gratitude to the government for the fact that there is no war. But no one will ask, is the war related to the real fight against corruption, torture in prison, or stopping the forced labor in the cotton fields? So today, Uzbek society is characterized by lack of critical thinking and very low expectations concerning politics and living standards.
Sanjar, what is the experience of Uzbek post-Cold War? Was that a positive experience?
At the beginning, it was big hope for political and economic development. But when the political elite and the rulers start to be very corrupt, this lead to lack of the political and economic development. And now the situation is very bad. Many poor people, more than 12,000 people in the prisons. So it's repressed.
When did your experience inside Uzbekistan collide with authorities and turn you into really much more of a activist than you originally thought you would be?
Yeah, I was jailed in October 2005. It was at the beginning, it was kidnapping. And for 2 days I was drugged. I was in the basement of police department, but no one of my relatives know where I am.
How did you get free?
After 4 long years with torture, with solitary confinement, you know, my health deteriorated drastically. My wife allowed to see me only after 3 years. And she, at the time, she was already a U.S. citizen. And she asked U.S. ambassador to help release me. It was at 2008.
Umida, I suspect that when you were sentenced in 2007, the fate that Sanjar is describing is what you fled Uzbekistan to avoid.
Yes, that's right. I was arrested in January 2007. The security service confiscated my laptop and found materials about the Andijan massacre. I was sentenced to 7 years in jail, but thanks to international support, I was released after 4 months I spent in Tashkent prison. And it took another 8 months to get the exit visa. And again, with the international support, I was granted amnesty and was allowed to leave Uzbekistan.
Does the U.S. government have a role to play? And have you been frustrated by the lack of attention that U.S. policymakers have given to Uzbekistan, Sanjar?
Yes and no. The U.S. Department of Justice, they found and freeze about $1 billion of dirty money of Uzbek kleptocrats in Western banks. And now we hope new administration will do next step and confiscate the money and use this money to push the Uzbek government for political, social, and economic reforms.
Yes, there is no democratic institutions in Uzbekistan, no free media, no independent civil society groups. But I strongly believe that only these democratic institutions can bring development in Uzbekistan. So my hope to the U.S. government, they could support these groups to establish democracy and wants to have a normal country.
Amita, what do you hope for possibly your children and the next generation of Uzbekis?
I really hope that now in the 21st century, it's not possible to rule the country in such dictatorial way. I doubt that that the new president, he is thinking about political reforms, but I still hope that he can understand that without the reforms, without the freedom, there is no future for the next generation and there will be no development for the country.
You know, now when we speak about Uzbekistan, they think about corruption, they think about forced labor, all bad things. But at the same time, for example, in Uzbekistan was born inventor of algebra, Al-Khwarizmi. So I want when people speak about Uzbekistan, they think about algebra. When the people say algorithm, they think about Uzbekistan.
Sanjar and Umida, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Umida. Thank you, John.
Umida Niyazova is the director of the Uzbek-German Forum for Human Rights, and Sanjar Umarov is a former Uzbek businessman and political prisoner.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.